The saying goes, an apple a day keeps the doctor away. But what if you don't have access to fresh produce where you live? Or transportation to the doctor if that apple doesn't work? Or someone to watch your kids while you're at the doctor? Or, you get the point. A person's success in managing their health and wellness may depend much less on what happens inside of a doctor's office than what happens outside of it. There's plenty about where we are born, grow, live, and work, and how these circumstances are shaped by access to resources that influence the health we can achieve. There's a name for it: social determinants of health. So as a community, how might we begin to address these social determinants? How might we make progress towards reducing health disparities and improving health equity? How do we create a future where people receive support to stay well, rather than just treating them when they are sick? It starts with research. It starts with conversations. It starts with listening. It starts with understanding. Supporting people in their journey to good health is part of how we can create a better world. I'm Ellen Beckjord. Good Health, Better World is a show about how stronger communities begin with good health for everyone, even outside the doctor's office. In this third episode, we're joined by Secretary Teresa Miller, who leads the Pennsylvania Department of Human Services, Earl Buford, CEO of Partner for Work, and Dan LaValle, director at the UPMC Center for Social Impact.
But first, let's listen to a short field report by Post Industrial Media from the recent graduation ceremony of the Partners for Work program.
Private Christian school for the past 7 years, and due to COVID, the school's been shut down, so everything is online training, and there was just no purpose for me to be there in an empty building every day.
You see yourself with a goal in this, I think that's good. And continue to do that.
Yeah, oh, it's an excellent program.
It is, it's an excellent program.
It's really an honor to welcome Teresa Miller, who is Secretary of the Pennsylvania Department of Human Services, to the Good Health, Better World podcast. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Secretary Miller, you've been the secretary since 2017, and your work has focused on collaborating across agencies to advance Governor Wolf's health innovation and workforce development agendas. You've also been the Pennsylvania Insurance Commissioner, and prior to that, were at the federal level at the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services, where you worked on implementation of the Affordable Care Act. First, if you wouldn't mind just orienting our listeners to the Department of Human Services in Pennsylvania and your role in particular.
Absolutely. And DHS is an incredibly far-reaching agency. We have a $40 billion total budget. And we administer healthcare, public assistance, childcare, child welfare, long-term care, behavioral health, early learning, supportive services for people with disabilities, and a number of other programs that reach more than 3 million Pennsylvanians at any one point in time. I always say that DHS is really a resource and a lifeline for all Pennsylvanians and really exists to improve the quality of life for people across all ages in the Commonwealth. We know one of the other points I like to always make is that at any point in time, a significant change or an unexpected event may require someone to turn to supports and services that we provide at DHS. And I meet people every day, or at least I used to before the pandemic, who are using our services who never thought that they would be. You know, but a divorce or a job loss or other unexpected event like a medical condition changed their life in ways they didn't expect. So that's why we're here, and it's why our agency is so important.
One of the initiatives that you've paid special attention to, that you've put a lot of momentum behind, is employment. Could you talk a little bit about your views on employment in the realm of social determinants of health?
Absolutely. You know, in general, I think both healthcare and human services professionals are realizing that it's not enough to just be able to go visit a doctor. Getting in the door is important, and having access to healthcare is important. And knowing that you have access to healthcare without risking, you know, bankruptcy is critical. But the bigger question is, what happens when you leave? For many people, these social determinants are not choices that can change or that they'll be able to overcome on their own. So if we want our healthcare system to be effective, we need to see people for who they are and what they experience throughout their lives. But more specifically to employment, over the last few years, there have been a lot of conversations, both in Pennsylvania, but also across the country, really focused on work requirements for people covered by Medicaid. I don't think it's any secret that both Governor Wolf and all of us in his administration are really not keen on jeopardizing anyone's access to healthcare. We have been really laser focused over the last almost 6 years now on doing everything we can to expand that access. But while this has been a really contentious issue in Pennsylvania and around the country, the point I've tried to make for the last couple of years is I actually think we agree here on more than we don't. We all want everyone to have the independence and sense of meaning and purpose that come from working. And this is why one of the department's top priorities has been and continues to be increasing employment opportunities for all those that we serve. But I think what we've learned over the last few years is, especially as we think about these requirements, is that they're not really an effective way to truly support individuals in poverty in transitioning into living wage jobs and off of public assistance for the long term, which should be all of our goal. A work requirement is a really blunt instrument. It doesn't get a person a job. It doesn't address the social and educational and environmental barriers that keep people in that cycle of poverty. Instead, it jeopardizes their access to healthcare and other essential needs. And without that investment, that really addresses the factors that can hold people back. Not to mention the costly administrative processes and bureaucratic red tape that create obstacles and confusion. Work requirements are not the answer here. Instead, they just create another barrier. So we're trying to figure out how can we support people in getting to work without creating that obstacle or that lack of healthcare. Because at the end of the day, people need access to healthcare if they're going to be successful in the workplace. So that's why we started looking at our programs to say, how can we do a better job of helping people navigate and overcome the barriers they're facing and achieve their education, their training, their employment goals, and help them get to living wage jobs and help them transition off of public assistance for the long term.
Can you talk a little bit about that notion of support and especially how, when we think about communities of color, people who have been affected by health disparities, systemic racism, that there are lots of reasons that folks need support. to support them to take advantage of the opportunities that are being created. How has that factored into the way that you've been thinking about providing that level of deep support to reach this goal of job security and economic independence?
You know, we need to understand and acknowledge the systemic racism in our country and in all of our programs and services. And that's something that we have been very focused on, not just in our Medicaid Work Supports program and support for people on Medicaid, but broadly across our programs. I talked earlier about our focus of work on work programs comes from that interest in how do we do a better job of promoting work instead of sort of holding their healthcare in the balance and saying, if you don't work, we're going to take away your access to healthcare. And because of that, that goal in trying to do a better job of getting people to work and helping them break down all the barriers that exist. And so many of those barriers are barriers that are there because people have lived in poverty for so long and they faced those generational barriers, those racial barriers, based on the environment that they've grown up in, their zip code, which we know has such a huge impact on people's lives and their trajectory and their life expectancy, frankly, and their education and their earnings and all of that. So we have been partnering with the managed care organizations and the Department of Labor and Industry and launched a Medicaid Work Supports program that established a really direct and systemic introduction to employment and training resources for Medicaid enrollees. Before this, our managed care organizations, they had smaller targeted employment initiatives, but this new system really allowed us to create a uniform, streamlined approach to reach more people across the Medicaid program. So under this model, when people are deemed eligible and they enroll in a new Medicaid health plan or they change their Medicaid health plan, they'll be asked if they're interested in learning more about help finding a job training program and opportunities to get a high school diploma or GED. And individuals who respond yes to that question then receive outreach either through the PA Career Link or their selected health plan, or maybe their local county assistance office to provide awareness of and referral to resources and programs available in their local community. This program launched in February of this year, and we all know what happened right after that. When COVID hit, it really derailed the initial implementation. But what we've learned since then is that many of our MCOs did continue this outreach where possible. And there have been some really exciting partnerships developing, like between UPMC and Partner for Work, which is the local workforce development board, to really increase connections to meaningful training programs and employment opportunities, both within the healthcare system, but also just in a variety of jobs based on the members' needs and their interests. Due to unemployment and the financial impacts of the pandemic, so we're now in the process of resuming the system, beginning that regular outreach once again, and in collaboration with our MCOs, then really looking at what changes do we need to make given the landscape that we're now in.
But one of the things that strikes me is the partnership element. And that's a theme that is just coming up again and again. But the partnership between the Department of Labor and Industry and the Department of Human Services, is that a relatively unique partnership? Is it a model that can be scaled across other local governments or the nation? And what have you found to be challenging about forging a partnership like that?
So I appreciate the question, because the interesting thing for me is I've been in government now on the state side and the federal side for many years. And I always say, I don't know why, but for some reason, working across agencies is like an unnatural act for agencies. We just don't do it, and we don't do it well. But I think one of the things we're also appreciating as healthcare and human services professionals is none of us alone can solve all of the issues that someone or their family might have. So we have this appreciation. We need to look at people as whole people. And we need to look at the issues that they may have faced throughout their life instead of just taking someone as they come into the emergency room or doctor's office, fixing the issue that they've come in for, and then letting them go. We need to understand what's behind what might be happening that particular day. So one of the things we've been working on with our MCOs as well, and really our community-based organizations also, is how do we all do a better job of communicating and working together? So this partnership with L&I, it's been a great partnership. And I think we've recognized that our folks are going into Career Links, which is part of the L&I system. How do we just do this in a way that we have a better understanding of the journey that people are going on? So while it's always difficult breaking down those silos, I think this really has been a good partnership. And it's one of a number of ways that we are trying to do a better job of bringing everyone together. Because one of the things I've realized in this job is we have so many entities that are engaged with families, particularly families that are living in poverty. And yet we do a very poor job on the whole of communicating across those entities and sharing information and really making the best use of all the resources. My experience is not that we have a serious lack of resources, but that we don't coordinate those resources in any kind of meaningful way so that we can make the best use of them. One of the other efforts we've been engaged in is trying to establish a statewide resource and referral tool. And really the whole goal with that tool is to allow all of the entities that are interfacing with families to share information and to really be able to see in real time someone's journey through the system to see, are they getting the help they need? You know, what are the issues, whether it's food insecurity, housing, employment, education, whatever the issues they're facing, are we effectively, all of us, not just state or government, all of us, are we effectively addressing those issues in a timely way? And making sure that the right entity is providing the right service at the right time. That's really the goal.
I really applaud the work that you're doing to figure out how to go above and beyond how we typically work to have that effort in play, because it seems like those kinds of partnerships are the ones that are going to produce the most impactful initiatives and solutions to solve what have been, you know, really long-standing problems. And the problems themselves, no doubt, can be overwhelming. But I think a lot of the way forward comes from some of just looking at how to think about partnership differently. And so this model that you're establishing here in Pennsylvania, you know, what wonderful potential and really exciting to see it take root and take hold in the Medicaid Work Support Initiative. So thank you for sharing some of your thoughts about that in particular. I have one more question, and then I always make sure to let the guest say something in case there's anything else you'd like to mention. So this is not a podcast about the pandemic, but we're recording the episodes during the pandemic. And of course, we know that the COVID-19 pandemic has really built, I think, momentum around renewed focus and rigor on addressing social determinants of health and addressing health disparities. It's, of course, also shown the overwhelming consequences for communities of color, traditionally underserved folks, that going into a global pandemic under those circumstances, that those folks have been so disproportionately affected. And so here, as we're talking now, it's the end of October, about 7-8 months into this. How are you thinking about meeting the needs of individuals who are perhaps for the first time, you know, really facing social determinant issues, food security, housing security, employment security, for the first time as we try to keep things together through the rest of what's ahead?
Yeah, I think the circumstances that people are living through right now make everything we just talked about so much more important and so much more critical. Because to your point, we know this pandemic has laid bare the serious inequities that persist in Pennsylvania and around the country, and the precarious situations that so many people live in. And with the historic unemployment we've experienced this year, and so many people still out of work, I really worry about the people that we can't reach. And we've certainly been doing everything we can to exercise flexibilities that we have, to use federal waivers, to get additional assistance to people when at all possible, because we know just so many people are hurting. And I know sometimes people can be hesitant to apply for public assistance programs. What we are facing now is exactly why these programs exist. We are here to ease difficult times and ensure that people can meet basic needs, but like being able to go to the doctor and having enough to eat. And if we're able to help people who've lost income, or help them get a lead on a new job, or help them pursue a new field, I think that's a bonus. And so I want to make sure we're meeting their basic needs. But again, if we can also address those social determinant of health needs and help them get a job by all the programs that we're working on, I think that's the goal. But I really worry about the future, and we're going to do everything we can to support the people we serve. But I also really worry about those people that make just a little more than the eligibility thresholds for our programs, because they struggle in normal times, and during a pandemic, they're gonna struggle even more.
Is there anything else that you'd like to share with folks listening?
You know, I think sometimes government gets a bad rap, and I think state and federal employees sometimes can get a bad rap. But I have been so fortunate in my life to work with some incredibly talented people, and people that are just so dedicated to the mission of helping to improve the lives of those in our communities. And we can always do a better job. And I'm excited because we have so many initiatives right now that we're pushing that are really aiming to do a better job. We're never going to be satisfied with what we're doing. And if anyone thinks that that's what government does, I can assure them that at least here in Pennsylvania, we are all always trying to review our programs and say, where can we do better? And I think particularly in this year when we've had conversations about racial disparities that have been so long overdue, that's another area where, as we're constantly improving, we need to remember that so many people in our communities have barriers that a lot of us, like me, who are white and who've had white privilege my entire life, can't even imagine. And we have to keep them in our minds all the time as we're trying to improve programs and make sure that they are able to take advantage of these opportunities as well.
Well, Secretary Miller, I can't tell you how wonderful it's been to talk with you today. So appreciate your time. So thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was my pleasure.
Well, I am really excited to have the chance to speak today with you, Earl Buford, about Partner for Work and its programs as part of the Good Health, Better World podcast. Thank you so much for making time to talk with us today.
Thank you for having me. It's exciting.
Then it'd be wonderful if you could talk a little bit about your background and what led you to this work.
Well, as many of you may not know, I'm a recent transplant to Pittsburgh. I came here, 2+ years ago, which is exciting. And I'm the chief executive officer at Partner for Work, which is the local Workforce Development Board. Workforce boards, sir, there's about 600 of us across the country, and we basically have governance over a designated workforce area. In this case, it's Allegheny County. I have an interesting story that led me to this work. So I'm the byproduct of a high school pregnancy. Fortunately for me, my parents were married soon thereafter, been married over 50 years. So, but a couple things happened in that in the course of the life they built. My mother went to college and became a teacher, now retired. And my father's probably like most of the individuals that come through our workforce systems. Hardworking guy, bounced from job to job, but couldn't find that break. And so he went through a job training program back in Milwaukee, where we're from, that was directly tied to direct employment with a major employer. And so our lives changed forever because of those situations. And so since then, my life has been about how do I recreate that for someone? So I fell into workforce development because of that. Here we are here today with the chance to lead an organization that's responsible for that same thing.
We're really lucky to have you here in Pittsburgh and working on behalf of Allegheny County. I want to ask a question about a phrase that you used in an interview you did. You used the phrase ecosystem of work. I had never thought about an ecosystem of work, but clearly that's an important idea. Can you say a little bit about what that means?
We're an organization which is more a workforce association for private industry. And I coined a phrase, industry-led, worker-centered, community-focused. And the idea was you need all of these avenues to come together to do really effective workforce development / economic development. Otherwise, we're all going to do what we do and probably do it well. We're going to do it at a very really small scale. But these type of efforts, these type of major talent solutions need effective, scalable solutions. And so this ecosystem grows. And the other term I hear often now is a spider web. Like your spider web starts to grow as your partnerships grow.
What would you say then about in Allegheny County? So now you've been at the helm of this here in Allegheny County for a couple of years. What are the strengths of our local ecosystem of work? And what are some of the opportunities that you're working to develop?
Yeah. So just to clarify, so as a workforce board, we are the federally mandated workforce steward of federal job training funds and other work-related funds that come into this area. So we're the stewards of these funds, just like the other 600 boards are. The board of directors, upon hiring me, asked me to do three key things. One, keep the system strong or make it faster, more responsive, all those things that we want our workforce to be responsive. But two, they wanted us to bring on more industry partners, more employer partners, better relationships, and strong relationships. The third thing was rethink of ourselves as a funder. So when you hear a workforce board, you automatically think of talent and supply. But what's probably not known is that we're a $25 billion workforce board. So we're probably, if not the largest public funder, probably the second largest next to Allegheny County DHS. So it's a very significant. We have about 50 plus subcontracts to local agencies from Point Park to CCAC to Goodwill, et cetera. So a pretty major player in the world of grant making and giving.
Can you say some more about some of Partner for Work programs?
So on one end, we're responsible for the local, what they call American Job Centers. Here they call CareerLink. And so there's two CareerLink offices within the county's jurisdiction. So we've hired providers to manage that and in partnership with the State Department of Labor and Industry. The other side of that, I mentioned 50 plus contracts. So we have a variety of providers doing things like our Energy Innovation Center partnership that has does programs with UPMC. That's one partnership. As a matter of fact, you asked me earlier about this ecosystem. I said industry led. So we've targeted 9 sectors of interest. And I always struggle with all 9, but I'll give you a highlight of who some of them are. Healthcare, obviously, manufacturing, construction, the tech sector, IT, hospitality. We're working on a public sector strategy with both the city and the county. And so with each one of those sectors, we've developed what we call industry partnerships or advisory boards made up of employers or industry where they're advising us. We're not telling them, here's a great program. You should hire our people who come out of this program. But we're allowing them to develop the programming that they want to see and actually articulate into how to onboard into industry-led situations or individual employers.
Who are the people you're trying to serve? Who stands to benefit from this wonderful work? And who are the great candidates for this?
As a public system, the minimum age you have to be is 14, especially for our youth program. Our summer jobs program called Learn and Earn, which is about 2,000 young people. Now, it varies in industry. Some industries looking for young adults, 18 to 24. Some prefer someone with a little more seasoned. So it's our job and our system's job to make sure we know exactly what those employers and those industry leaders want and start to do their matching.
I want to ask about how the COVID-19 pandemic has affected, I can imagine, every aspect, right? But I'm just curious about, how you've been navigating that and if there are any bright spots.
Yeah, it's been tough as it has for everyone. At the same time, there's been a lot of opportunity to do different things or try different things. So the biggest hurdle for us is obviously safety. We have our open career centers, career links that we have to manage. So we had to virtually and call center, make the communication. So, late March, I created a COVID workforce task force called Ready to Work. And we did that for a couple of reasons. One, to help us deal with the onslaught of individuals that were, you know, needing help and support on the employer side and also on the individual side, worker side. We also had, you know, stakeholders who had questions that needed answering and had lots of there's just a lot of coordination needed. So we figured this task force was the way to go, not just to have a group that's convening, but to actually create solutions. It's a three-phase approach. So there's immediate reaction. How do we immediately deal with safety and contact tracing and unemployment and job orders from employers that still need people right away? So that was our immediate phase. And then the phase we're in now is the intermediate phase, where we're really thinking about how do we start to link all these things that everyone are doing. And that's the beauty of having this coalition meet regularly and talk about who's hearing what, who's doing what, and what can we add on and enhance what they're doing. And the long-term goal here is, what do we hope to look like? What's the spectrum of workforce development coming out of the pandemic for the greater Pittsburgh area? And that's where, you know, we're using this time to also strategically plan what that really looks like.
Thank you for sharing all of that. Though, you know, one of the major areas of emphasis of this podcast is on social determinants of health. And we know that our region in Pittsburgh, that we have major inequities when it comes to certain aspects of health and health outcomes, and also some inequities that we have to resolve for and eliminate in the context of education and employment. It seems like there are lots of ways that your work is part of trying to advance more equity in employment and educational opportunities for people in our region. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Boys, with the pandemic, a lot of inequities were just magnified. 25 years in workforce, traditionally, even when we're building a program, we always talk in codes. It's like, well, minority populations or this neighborhood. Well, quite frankly, now in meetings where people are saying, well, how can we get the Black community, or how can we help Black people? How we, very clear words. And I appreciate that because we're not sugarcoating anymore these conversations. And I hope the listeners understand what I mean when I say that, because it's refreshing to finally have a real conversation about our efforts and our intent.
Yes. And actually, let me just pause right there to say, even I think I was speaking too much in code a minute ago. What I meant was, Black people in Pittsburgh are disproportionately suffering from higher rates of poor health outcomes, disproportionately challenged by lack of access to education and employment. And so how is Partner for Work helping the Black people in Allegheny County?
Over 60% of our client base is African-American. So let's just start there. Second, to your question, I thank you for being that direct. In these industry partnerships I talked about, these employer conversations we're having that same conversation now about not just building talent, but the equitable situation that they're looking to bring into their industry. We're having real conversations now, or at least open. I also looked at what Partner for Work can do as a company, a $25 million company. We're not a small company by any means. So how we think through our equitable stance as an employer and as a board of directors. And we created a equity and inclusion director position to really work really closer with the community at large. Back to the original question about this building this ecosystem is, we want to have a seat at the table in all these conversations at all the various levels.
I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the role that work plays in identity. And I think of that even in the context of health, right? What's the role of work in identity and sort of in well-being, if you will?
Well, absolutely. Well said, by the way. To have that sense of responsibility for one, as an individual contributor to society, but two, to develop and grow a family, develop your own family tree, all those that sense that comes from that, and that pride that comes from that. Again, I personally lived it. The biggest part of it is there's a need. So for our economic base to continue to grow, we have to have talent to build and craft and teach and all that. And the flip side, we just talked about, our citizenry is ready to go to work. My whole motto now is, I want to make sure that two ships pass in the night start to collide. That's, employers and industry and job seekers to start to meet in the middle more and connect.
Really appreciate the time you've spent telling us about Partner for Work the stories that you've shared. And again, so grateful to be in partnership with you to have the health plan be a meaningful part of supporting that ecosystem of work. And just so glad that you spent time with us today on the Good Health, Better World podcast.
Thank you. Really appreciate the opportunity.
Well, it's really my great pleasure to welcome Dan LaValle to the Good Health, Better World podcast. Dan, you're just such a treasured colleague of mine, so I'm really excited to have this time to sit down and have a conversation with you, but I'll let you introduce yourself.
So I'm Dan LaValle. I'm the director of social impact at the new UPMC Center for Social Impact. Excited to be here and excited to talk to you.
Wonderful. Well, as you know, the Good Health, Better World podcast is focusing on social determinants of health. So the Center for Social Impact is putting a lot of effort behind workforce development. Can you say a little bit about why and then tell us about the Pathways to Work program?
Sure. I mean, you know, during this time and the pandemic, you know, we've seen, you know, over 2 million initial jobless claims in Pennsylvania, people who were out of work at one point or another. I mean, that is over 30% of the labor force in Pennsylvania. I mean, across the country, over 50 million since March. Again, over 30% of the labor force. I mean, we have never seen these numbers. Just to give a little perspective, Alan, in 2008, during the recession, we had 1 month where we hit 600,000 jobless claims across the country. We have consistently been at or around 1 million a week since March across the country. So for us at UPMC and within the Center for Social Impact, you know, we see work as paramount. I mean, that it's dignity, it's who you are, it's being able to provide for your family, it's making a meaningful difference. We feel like we can play a role in that. There are some other, you know, misnomers out there about work, I think, that are worth us talking a little bit about. Sometimes the thought that people don't want to get to work. And that really isn't, you know, what we've experienced in a lot of ways. You know, Kaiser Family Foundation put out a report recently that showed that, you know, near 60 to 70% of people on Medicaid either already work and the rest of them are in school or taking care of a loved one. And now there's more who are out of work now. But people are ready to work. You know, we feel very hopeful that we can make a difference.
Clearly, the Center for Social Impact's focus on workforce development and the Pathways to Work program are very well timed given the pandemic. But plans were underway for a long time. This wasn't in response to the pandemic. Can you say a little bit more about why workforce development rose to the top as something that UPMC Health Plan wanted to put specific effort behind?
It's been driven by what we hear from our members in the community every day. You know, they have so many barriers to employment. You know, so many are underemployed and were before the pandemic. People are not in, you know, jobs that they can grow in an integrated system and an employer, and the largest non-governmental employer in the state, that we want our workforce to be more like the people that we serve. This for us was a way to try to find pathways, especially into jobs at UPMC. You know, that was a goal of ours. Our team has worked very hard to partner with individuals and organizations in communities like McKeesport, Mount Oliver, across the Commonwealth, and Lancaster, and up in Erie, that have focused on hiring individuals off of cash assistance. That's been a program that we've had for years. And then now with the pandemic that just accelerated some of the devastation, we felt like we had a foundation in place, you know, to do that.
Absolutely. Well, tell us a little bit more about the specifics of the Pathway to Work program. What is it? How does it work?
You know, we obviously want pathways to careers and meaningful work opportunities, but that pathway is built with trust. So we've done a couple things. We want to hire people, of course. And then secondly, we want to make sure that people can find the best training and education programs that lead them to the jobs of today and tomorrow. And then third, make those two things happen through partnerships and through building out, you know, an internal focus on how we can make things better inside UPMC. What we did in the past couple of months in response to the pandemic was, you know, we built out a new team.
When we enroll a new member in our Medicaid product, there's some process in place, it sounds like, that lets them say, I'm interested in work opportunities. Can you say a little bit about what that process is? Is that just part of Medicaid in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania?
Yeah, so this is a beautiful new program that the Department of Human Services and the Department of Labor and Industry started in February. Ironically, they had started this right before the pandemic as well because they saw the need. And what happens is when somebody signs up for Medicaid now, they are able to put an answer to a question if they would like work support. And then we as the health plan, when we get them into our system, we make calls, of course, with our new members to make sure they have a primary care physician, make sure they're ready to get the care they need. But now we're able to add a point when we have somebody on the phone, we can have our team talk a little bit with them about, you know, what supports and services are out there. A work supports initiative, as it's been called by Secretary Miller, and we're very excited about, you know, the possibilities in this program. And we also benefit really from being able to partner with workforce boards in more meaningful ways, because they also, as the public workforce system, you know, in every county across the Commonwealth and across the country, you know, they're the ones that are really, you know, supporting individuals who've lost jobs.
I would say how important human connection is to solving these incredibly big challenges we have. Human connection is so important. At the same time, we're typically asked to figure out how to do things at scale. And sometimes those things feel like they're at odds with one another. How do you reconcile that?
That's a great question. You know, I, in terms of the human connection, you know, what I've, you know, realized is we need to go to people's tables. When we first started some of the you know, the next phase of Pathways to Work earlier this year, before the pandemic, you know, I just went out on the road to just visit people and hear from them of what we needed to do, whether it be a community organization or a workforce board, you know, or our other, you know, health plan partners and others. So, you know, for us, what we're trying to do with Pathways to Work in particular is to take this model that we have now that we've really focused on, you know, in Western Pennsylvania. But now that we have a team and people who know how to, you know, have some of these conversations, we can take this across the Commonwealth. We can take this to Lancaster, to Dauphin, to Harrisburg, to Erie, and we already are. And now we know a little bit more about how to build that. So we see this program scaling, you know, pretty quickly. You know, we'll learn as we go.
And you're raising, I mean, I think something that maybe I hadn't thought about in the context of that question before that you're making me think about now is that every relationship that you build changes the game, right? It's, you know, it's not, we have to build so many relationships. Yes, we have to scale across such large communities, but along the way, the game is changing as you do it, right? So there's an exponential ripple effect as we build those relationships, which maybe can only be meaningfully built, you know, one or a few at a time. But then you're working from a new foundation as you try to move forward from there. So thank you. That actually makes me feel a lot more hopeful about that question. One of the questions I wanted to ask you, the work that you and the Center for Social Impact are engaged in is not easy, right? If these problems were easy to solve, we wouldn't be needing to do the work to begin with. So I do want to ask, what are some of the challenges? And then how are you working to overcome them?
I think to me, the challenge is adequately, you know, building trust and being genuine. I know there are times when I've been a little scared to be vulnerable in some of this work. And if you're able to be vulnerable and just trust that we can get to a better place, you know, to me, that is how we break through the challenges. And, you know, I know that's a more philosophical answer to it. But, you know, I think that, you know, if we, you know, just be honest about what we don't know and what we do, and we all bring that, you know, together, and we all are our authentic selves. You know, this is, we're all in this together. We're a family here.
I can think of lots of ways and reasons that the COVID-19 pandemic has fueled, has amplified, has expedited the work of the Center for Social Impact. And I can think of lots of ways that the circumstances of the pandemic have created more barriers and challenges. On the whole, would you say that the COVID-19 pandemic has actually propelled things forward even more quickly, more forcefully, more meaningfully, or has it created more barriers?
I think that the one piece out of it is it has brought us all together as a community and has helped, you know, us, you know, find other people who are so just starving for something different. It's given us a chance in the sadness and the just difficulty of it, and, you know, and the vulnerability. It's given us a chance to to take this moment and articulate. And we only have one chance to do that and do that in the right way and do that standing arm in arm with our, you know, friends and family and neighbors. You know, even in the sadness, we can get to a place of hope.
Oh, I'm so glad that you're doing this work, Dan. And I really appreciate your sharing all of your thoughts and perspectives and such a hopeful outlook, which I know is backed up by an incredible amount of hard work and commitment and dedication.
Thank you for who you are.
Thank you for listening to Good Health, Better World, presented by UPMC Health Plan. Have a joyous holiday season. Be sure to come back next time.